Chapter 34. The doctor, looking very stern, made a pause until the water was brought, and then resumed. And when, Mr. Feeder apostrophe, but Mr. Feeder, who saw that Johnson must break out again, and who knew that the doctor would never come to a period before the young gentleman until he had finished all he meant to say, couldn't keep his eye off Johnson, and thus was caught in the fact of not looking at the doctor, who consequently stopped. I beg your pardon, sir, apostrophe said Mr. Feeder, reddening. I beg your pardon, Dr. Blimber. Apostrophe, and when, apostrophe said the doctor, raising his voice, when, sir, as we read, and have no reason, to doubt incredible as it may appear to the vulgar of our time the brother of Vitellius prepared for him a feast, in which were served, of fish, 2,000 dishes, apostrophe, take some water, Johnson dishes, sir, apostrophe said Mr. Feeder, of various sorts of fowl, 5,000 dishes, apostrophe, or try a crust of bread, apostrophe said Mr. Feeder. And one dish, apostrophe pursued Dr. Blimber, raising his voice still higher as he looked all round the table, called, from its enormous dimensions, the shield of Minerva, and made, among other costly ingredients, of the brains of pheasants, apostrophe, ow, 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 apostrophe, apostrophe, from Johnson. Woodcocks, apostrophe, ow, 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 apostrophe, apostrophe, the sounds of the fish called scurry, apostrophe, you'll burst some vessel in your head, apostrophe said Mr. Feeder. You had better let it come, apostrophe, and the spawn of the lamprey, brought from the Carpathian Sea, apostrophe pursued the doctor, in his severest voice. When we read of costly entertainments such as these, and still remember that we have a Titus, apostrophe, what would be your mother's feelings if you died of apoplexy? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mr. Feeder. A Domitian, apostrophe, a near blue, you know, apostrophe, said Mr. Feeder. A Nero, a Tiberius, a Caligula, a Heliogabalus, and many more, pursued the doctor. It is, Mr. Feeder, if you are doing me the honor to attend, remarkable, very remarkable, sir, apostrophe, but Johnson, unable to suppress it any longer, burst at that moment into such an overwhelming fit of coughing, that although both his immediate neighbors thumped him on the back, and Mr. Feeder himself held a glass of water to his lips, and the butler walked him up and down several times between his own chair and the sideboard, like a sentry, it was a full 5 minutes before he was moderately composed. Then there was a profound silence. Gentlemen, apostrophe said Dr. Blimber, rise for grace. Cornelia, lift Dombey down, nothing of whom, but his scalp was accordingly seen above the tablecloth. Johnson will repeat to me tomorrow morning before breakfast, without book, and from the Greek Testament, the first chapter of the Epistle of St. Paul to the Ephesians. We will resume our studies, Mr. Feeder, in half an hour. Apostrophe, the young gentleman bowed and withdrew. Mr. Feeder did likewise. During the half hour, the young gentleman, broken in two pairs, loitered arm in arm up and down a small piece of ground behind the house, or endeavored to kindle a spark of animation in the breast of Briggs. But nothing happened so vulgar as play. Punctually at the appointed time, the gong was sounded, and the studies, under the joint auspices of Dr. Blimber and Mr. Feeder, were resumed. As the Olympic game of lounging up and down had been cut shorter than usual that day, on Johnson's account, they all went out for a walk before tea. Even Briggs, though he hadn't begun yet, partook of this dissipation, in the enjoyment of which he looked over the cliff two or three times darkly. Dr. Blimber accompanied them, and Paul had the honor of being taken in tow by the doctor himself. A distinguished state of things, in which he looked very little and feeble. Tea was served in a style no less polite than the dinner, and after tea, the young gentleman, rising and bowing as before, withdrew to fetch up the unfinished tasks of that day, or to get up the already looming tasks of tomorrow. In the meantime, Mr. Feeder withdrew to his own room, and Paul sat in a corner wondering whether Florence was thinking of him, and what they were all about at Mrs. Pipchin's. Mr. Toots, who had been detained by an important letter from the Duke of Wellington, found Paul out after a time, and having looked at him for a long while, as before, inquired if he was fond of waistcoats. Paul said yes, sir. Apostrophe, so am I, apostrophe said Toots. No word more spoke Toots that night, but he stood looking at Paul, as if he liked him, and as there was company in that, and Paul was not inclined to talk, it answered his purpose better than conversation. At 8 o'clock or so, the gong sounded again for prayers in the dining room, where the butler afterwards presided over a side table, on which bread and cheese and beer were spread for such young gentlemen as desired to partake of those refreshments. The ceremonies concluded by the doctor saying, "Gentlemen, we will resume our studies at 7 tomorrow," apostrophe and then, for the first time, Paul saw Cornelia Blimber's eye, and saw that it was upon him. When the doctor had said these words, "Gentlemen, we will resume our studies at 7 tomorrow," apostrophe the pupils bowed again, and went to bed. In the confidence of their own room upstairs, Brick said his head ached ready to split, and that he should wish himself dead, if it wasn't for his mother, and a blackbird he had at home. Tozer didn't say much, but he sighed a good deal, and told Paul to look out, for his turn would come tomorrow. After uttering those prophetic words, he undressed himself moodily, and got into bed. Briggs was in his bed too, and Paul in his bed too, before the weak-eyed young man appeared to take away the candle, when he wished them good night and pleasant dreams. But his benevolent wishes were in vain, as far as Briggs and Tozer were concerned. For Paul, who lay awake for a long while, and often woke afterwards, found that Briggs was ridden by his lesson as a nightmare. And that Tozer, whose mind was affected in his sleep by similar causes, in a minor degree talked unknown tongues, or scraps of Greek and Latin, it was all one to Paul, which, in the silence of night, had an inexpressibly wicked and guilty effect. Paul had sunk into a sweet sleep, and dreamed that he was walking hand in hand with Florence through beautiful gardens, when they came to a large sunflower which suddenly expanded itself into a gong, and began to sound. Opening his eyes, he found that it was a dark, windy morning, with a drizzling rain, and that the real gong was giving dreadful note of preparation, down in the hall. So he got up directly, and found Briggs with hardly any eyes, for nightmare and grief had made his face puffy, putting his boots on, while Tozer stood shivering and rubbing his shoulders in a very bad humor. Poor Paul couldn't dress himself easily, not being used to it, and asked them, if they would have the goodness, to tie some strings for him, but as Briggs merely said, "Bother!" apostrophe apostrophe and Tozer, "Oh yes!" apostrophe he went down when he was otherwise ready, to the next story, where he saw a pretty young woman in leather gloves, cleaning a stove. The young woman seemed surprised at his appearance, and asked him where his mother was. When Paul told her she was dead, she took her gloves off, and did what he wanted, and furthermore rubbed his hands to warm them, and gave him a kiss, and told him whenever he wanted anything of that sort, meaning in the dressing way, to ask for Amelia, which Paul, thanking her very much, said he certainly would. He then proceeded softly on his journey downstairs, towards the room in which the young gentlemen resumed their studies, when, passing by a door that stood ajar, a voice from within cried, "Is that Dombey?" apostrophe apostrophe on Paul replying, "Yes, ma'am." For he knew the voice to be Miss Blimber's. Miss Blimber said, "Come in, Dombey." Apostrophe and in he went. Miss Blimber presented exactly the appearance she had presented yesterday, except that she wore a shawl. Her little light curls were as crisp as ever, and she had already her spectacles on, which made Paul wonder whether she went to bed in them. She had a cool little sitting room of her own up there, with some books in it, and no fire, but Miss Blimber was never cold, and never sleepy. "Now, Dombey," apostrophe said Miss Blimber, "I am going out for a constitutional." Apostrophe, Paul wondered what that was, and why she didn't send the footman out to get it in such unfavorable weather. But he made no observation on the subject. his attention being devoted to a little pile of new books, on which Miss Blimmer appeared to have been recently engaged. "These are yours, Dombey," apostrophe said Miss Blimmer.
"All of 'em, ma'am?"
apostrophe said Paul.
"Yes," apostrophe returned Miss Blimmer, "and Mr. Feeder will look you out some more very soon, if you are as studious as I expect you will be, Dombey."
Apostrophe, "Thank you, ma'am," apostrophe said Paul.
"I am going out for a constitutional," apostrophe resumed Miss Blimmer, "and while I am gone, that is to say in the interval between this and breakfast, Dombey, I wish you to read over what I have marked in these books, and to tell me, if you quite understand what you have got to learn. Don't lose time, Dombey, for you have none to spare, but take them downstairs, and begin directly."
Apostrophe, "Yes, ma'am," apostrophe answered Paul. There were so many of them, that although Paul put one hand under the bottom book, and his other hand and his chin on the top book, and hugged them all closely, the middle book slipped out before he reached the door, and then they all tumbled down on the floor. Miss Blimmer said, "Oh, Dombey, Dombey, this is really very careless."
Apostrophe and piled them up afresh for him, and this time, by dint of balancing them with great nicety, Paul got out of the room, and down a few stairs before two of them escaped again. But he held the rest so tight, that he only left one more on the first floor, and one in the passage, and when he had got the main body down into the schoolroom, he set off upstairs again to collect the stragglers. Having at last amassed the whole library, and climbed into his place, he fell to work, encouraged by a remark from Tozer to the effect that he was in for it now, apostrophe which was the only interruption he received till breakfast time. At that meal, for which he had no appetite, everything was quite as solemn and genteel as at the others, and when it was finished, he followed Miss Blimmer upstairs.
"Now, Dombey," apostrophe said Miss Blimmer, "how have you got on with those books?"
Apostrophe, "They comprised a little English, and a deal of Latin names of things, declensions of articles and substantives, exercises thereon, and preliminary rules a trifle of orthography, a glance at ancient history, a wink or two at modern ditto, a few tables, two or three weights and measures, and a little general information." When poor Paul had spelt out number 2, he found he had no idea of number 1, fragments whereof afterwards obtruded themselves into number 3, which slided into number 4, which grafted itself onto number 2. So that whether 20 Romuluses made a Remus, or hic he cock was Troy weight, or a verb all was agreed with an ancient Briton, or 3 times 4 was Taurus a bull, were open questions with him.
"Oh, Dombey, Dombey," apostrophe said Miss Blimmer, "this is very shocking."
Apostrophe, "If you please," apostrophe said Paul, "I think if I might sometimes talk a little to old Glubb, I should be able to do better."
Apostrophe, "Nonsense, Dombey," apostrophe said Miss Blimmer.
"I couldn't hear of it. This is not the place for Glubbs of any kind. You must take the books down, I suppose, Dombey, one by one, and perfect yourself in the day's installment of Subject A, before you turn at all to Subject B. I am sorry to say, Dombey, that your education appears to have been very much neglected."
Apostrophe, "So Papa says," apostrophe returned Paul, "but I told you I have been a weak child. Florence knows I have. So does Wickham."
Apostrophe, "Who is Wickham?"
Apostrophe asked Miss Blimmer.
"She has been my nurse," apostrophe Paul answered.
"I must beg you not to mention Wickham to me then," apostrophe said Miss Blimmer.
"I couldn't allow it."
"You asked me who she was," apostrophe said Paul.
"Very well," apostrophe returned Miss Blimmer, "but this is all very different indeed from anything of that sort, Dombey, and I couldn't think of permitting it. As to having been weak, you must begin to be strong. And now take away the top book, if you please, Dombey, and return when you are master of the theme." apostrophe, Miss Blimmer expressed her opinions on the subject of Paul's uninstructed state with a gloomy delight, as if she had expected this result, and were glad to find that they must be in constant communication. Paul withdrew with the top task, as he was told, and labored away at it, down below, sometimes remembering every word of it, and sometimes forgetting it all, and everything else besides, until at last he ventured upstairs again to repeat the lesson, when it was nearly all driven out of his head before he began, by Miss Blimmer's shutting up the book, and saying, "Good, Dommy." Apostrophe apostrophe a proceeding so suggestive of the knowledge inside of her, that Paul looked upon the young lady with consternation, as a kind of learned Guy Faux, or artificial bogle, stuffed full of scholastic straw. He acquitted himself very well, nevertheless, and Miss Blimmer, commending him as giving promise of getting on fast, immediately provided him with subject B, from which he passed to C, and even D before dinner. It was hard work, resuming his studies, soon after dinner, and he felt giddy, and confused and drowsy and dull. But all the other young gentlemen had similar sensations, and were obliged to resume their studies too, if there were any comfort in that. It was a wonder that the great clock in the hall, instead of being constant to its first inquiry, never said, "Gentlemen, we will now resume our studies," apostrophe for that phrase was often enough repeated in its neighborhood. The studies went round like a mighty wheel, and the young gentlemen were always stretched upon it. After tea there were exercises again, and preparations for next day by candlelight. And in due course there was bed, where, but for that resumption of the studies which took place in dreams, were rest and sweet forgetfulness. Oh Saturdays! Oh happy Saturdays, when Florence always came at noon, and never would, in any weather, stay away, though Mrs. Pipchin snarled and growled, and worried her bitterly. Those Saturdays were Sabbaths for at least two little Christians among all the Jews, and did the Holy Sabbath work of strengthening and knitting up a brother's and a sister's love. Not even Sunday nights, the heavy Sunday nights, whose shadow darkened the first waking burst of light on Sunday mornings, could mar those precious Saturdays. Whether it was the great seashore, where they sat and strolled together, or whether it was only Mrs. Pipchin's dull back room, in which she sang to him so softly, with his Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.